It is Tuesday, April 30th, 2013, and this is episode 16 of the Defensive Security Podcast. My name is Jerry Bell. Just a reminder, the nonsense you hear on this podcast is my views and do not represent those of my employer. So I apologize for the podcast being a couple days late. My weekend was a little crazy. I've had a lot of stuff going on at work and not had a lot of free time. All right, so let's jump in. The first thing is, another Java vulnerability. Moving on, Living Social announced that they were hacked and 50 million email addresses and passwords were stolen. Of course, the passwords were hashed and salted, 40-byte salt, SHA-1 hash. Not as bad as we've seen with many others before them, but still not a great scenario. You know, hopefully people get the message. And I realize people that listen to this podcast already got the message. Use a password manager. Generate long passwords. Don't use the same password on every site, please. Tell your friends. Tell your family. Ooh, I should tell you what I'm drinking. So Simply Lemonade mixed with Mike's Hard Lemonade and Grey Goose Vodka is fantastic. Oh, back to Living Social for a second. They apparently have decided to move to Bcrypt. And for anybody else out there who runs a major website and isn't using Bcrypt or the other one, BBKDF2, you get the hint and maybe move. You know, the other thing to consider is even moving to Bcrypt or PBKDF2 is really a temporary solution. And also be aware that both of those algorithms are set up so that you have a cost factor, and that cost factor needs to be adjusted over time. So just because, you know, you may be using, let's say, 10,000 rounds, or you're using a cost factor of 100 or 1,000 in the case of Bcrypt, over time, you need to adjust that. You know, Moore's Law says that what's complicated now is going to be pretty trivial in 5 years. And some of these sites are hanging out there for a long time. I mean, I think I signed up for Living Social shortly after they became big, and I think I used them once or twice and haven't since. But, you know, hey, my password got popped. And the same as everybody else who's been using the site every day. Oh, let's see. Symantec issued a report on first quarter 0 days, which basically was Java, Flash, and Internet Explorer. And Java, Flash, and Internet Explorer, and Java, and Flash, and Java, and Java, and Java. I saved you the trouble of reading the report. It might be worthwhile anyway. Links in the show notes, as usual. Next is Akamai released a State of the Internet report. I'll admit I haven't fully read this one. It doesn't appear that it draws some correlation between the growth in denial of service attacks against different areas of business with the growth in capacity of, I guess you would say, residential internet connections. Seems kind of interesting. Next, the Verizon DBIR 2013 was released. Holy cow. I love this report, and you should too. It's fantastic. I've loved this report every year that it's come out. I'm not going to talk a whole lot about it, at least right now, partly because I've been so busy I haven't fully read the thing. But it is fantastic. I've gotten about halfway through it, and what I've read so far is really good. The Verizon team that creates this report is really top-notch. They do a very good job of explaining uncertainty and how to really understand the data that you're looking at. So kudos to them. And I took a sneak peek at the bottom, and the one thing that really caught my attention is a mapping of different types of incidents that were categorized in the DBIR with the top 20 critical security controls. I think that would be highly useful to many organizations. Anyway, I know it's, you know, among the ranks of marketing spam put up by companies, but this is really truly a gem, and I encourage you to read it. All right, enough gushing over Verizon. Let's move on. InfoWorld has an interesting article about 5 security defenses that don't deliver. Actually, 5 hot security defenses that don't deliver. Even worse. Number 1, two-factor authentication. Well, the reason I will summarize given is that since it can't solve everything, it's really not worth it. To me, that's kind of like saying, well, anti-lag brakes can't stop every crash, so we really don't need it. This one drives me freaking crazy. Yes, absolutely. If somebody owns your PC, they can get in, they can take over your application. They don't need your password. They can use the session you've already got established. If you implement two-factor really badly and you deliver the second factor in the same system that you log in with, then yeah, you're going to have problems. But the reality is not all problems happen that way. And so I think to say that this is a hot technology that is a dud is really dumb. I mean, you know, let's pack up the firewalls and the IPSs and the antivirus. You know, none of that stuff works either. If I have to explain why two-factor is really important, you may want to consider a different line of business. I'm sorry to be crass. The next is biometrics, and I have to tell you, I agree with this one. I remember years ago having a pretty heated argument with a vice president of security strategy of a company I was working with at the time, and she was very, very gung-ho on biometrics, and I can vividly remember having a pretty impassioned argument against biometrics. And, you know, basically the problem is it's a password that you can never change. And in the case of fingerprints, it's a password that you leave all over the freaking place. Every time you touch something, you drop your password. How stupid is that? So, no, I don't think biometrics is a good idea. I think it's a really terrible idea, in fact. Dud number 3 is heuristics. And basically, this is going back to the antivirus. Heuristics was at one point going to be the savior of antivirus, but I think we all know how that worked out. And saying it's kind of a hot technology seems a little bit of a stretch, but I suppose they needed to get to 5, so there it is. But anyway, it's not really surprising to see that this would make it on the list, since at least as a dud. I think I disagree that it's a hot technology, but from an efficacy standpoint, again, malware writers are incented to make their stuff bypass AV engines that have heuristics detection built in. I mean, they're locked in their mom's basement writing code and checking it against McAfee and Symantec and others, and they keep diddling with it until they get it to work without being detected. It's really that simple. The next one is the so-called super secure programs, and I can only assume that they're talking about Java. They don't actually name any of these super secure programs, so I'm not really sure what they're talking about. But again, I think it's Java and Flash, and I definitely agree that Java and Flash are duds, in the security department at least. And the final one we'll kill before it even gets off the ground. Security dud number 5 is data analytics. And how big data is not going to be the savior of the information security world. You know, again, I hope people aren't surprised and weren't counting on data analytics to be all that as far as protection. But it is a piece of the pie. I mean, it's a piece of the pie like two-factor is, like firewalls are, like antivirus is. None of these things works by itself, and nor should we expect it. It needs to be put in an appropriate way. I mean, that's what we as strategists are here to do. If this were easy, they wouldn't need us. They'd replace us with a script and a blinky box, and, you know, I'd be working at Wendy's. And by the way, Wendy's fries are pretty darn good, so that might not be all that bad. All right, now on to some really serious, deep, impactful security problems. And it is the continued harassment and pervasive attacking of media outlets and their poor Twitter accounts by the Syrian Electronic Army. I mean, who are these guys? So last week, and I know this is old news by now, I apologize, but you know what? It's my podcast, and I want to talk about it. They hacked the AP, the Associated Press's Twitter feed, and I'm sure everybody knows the story by now. The Syrian Electronic Army hacked AP's Twitter feed and posted a story about bomb explosions at the White House and that the president was injured. And that's not actually all that interesting to me. What is interesting to me, and actually utterly fascinating to me, is how the stock market reacted to that and what the macro implications are to some of this more nuanced, kind of casual use technology are becoming in, you know, very ingrained in our daily lives and in our economy. I mean, who would have thought that a freaking Twitter account being hacked could cause the stock market to tank? So, you know, the FBI is apparently investigating, and I'm sure they'll eventually get to the bottom of it. And, you know, it does make me wonder if the government will now attempt to thrust upon Twitter some onerous security requirements. I look forward to seeing what happens there. You know, going back to two-factor, this is, I think, probably going to be the straw that breaks Twitter's back with respect to forcing their hand on the two-factor front, which is something they've been dragging their feet on for a while. So maybe they need a kick in the pants. Most other large organizations have figured this out by now. But I think it shows a couple of things. And you know, I've already mentioned one about how some of this technology that seems on the periphery of importance in our daily lives actually can become very important without us realizing it. And by the way, let me pontificate for a second. It reminds me, I used to run IT for a company a couple of years back, and it always surprised me, and you know, in retrospect, it probably shouldn't have surprised me, how applications and systems that people build for little pet purposes become very important, and no one really notices it. And it seems to be that kind of thing at work here, right? It's a niche thing that fills a particular need, and people build up these towers around it when that thing in the middle was really never intended to be that important in the first place. But I digress. The next thing it points out to me is the vulnerability of people in what was most likely a phishing type of attack. So somebody who has access to the Twitter account for AP probably got an email, and it probably said something like, you know, need to go into Twitter, something's going on. Or they got a private message in Twitter and somebody clicked on a link and it took them to a page which looked like the Twitter login form, and they entered their ID and password, bing, bang, boom. The rest is history. It's going to be something like that. You know, we see a lot of the script kids and I guess I'll call them amateur hackers on Twitter doing this to each other. I see it happening. At least I used to see it happening a lot to anons. Some people would go out anon hunting and basically fool them into clicking on a link which prompted them for a username and password, and in the end, the hunter ended up finding a lot of information out about the person they were targeting, because you know that person was falling victim to what was essentially a phishing attack. It's a real serious problem. It's a problem for Twitter. It's a problem in your business. People are very susceptible to this kind of thing, and the attackers know it. It's really, really difficult to stop someone from entering their username and password into a website that they think is legitimate. This kind of goes back to what I've said on previous podcasts, that if you've got people doing important things, you need to be doing that from systems that are very tightly controlled and probably don't have access to large parts of the internet. Otherwise, you're going to have this kind of problem. And, you know, the other problem I see is when you have an entity like the Associated Press have their Twitter account hacked, and you have a bad guy, in this case it was the Syrian Electronic Army, posting ridiculous claims about things. You know, I never understand what motivates them to post what they do. Seems like you could, you know, actually further your cause, maybe. Anyway, if you've got a bad guy that hijacks, for instance, the AP's Twitter feed, it seems to me to be ridiculously easy to post in a link that takes you to, it takes any visitors to a black hole site. You know, it's fairly easy to do because all of the URLs presented to you in Twitter are shortened, so you have no idea where the heck you're being taken. All right, enough bashing on Twitter and the Syrian Electronic Army. The final story I have for tonight, and I know there's been a lot more things going on this is just all I have had time to research, is last week, Eugene Kaspersky, at a conference, claimed that it was only a matter of time before cyber terrorists attack and attack the critical infrastructure of a country using tools like Stuxnet. I suppose that means it's probably also only a matter of time before someone launches a cyber nuke at another country and I guess destroys their cyber infrastructure, at least for a few minutes. But wait, that already happened a couple weeks ago. Crap. Now, I will say, to me, it seems like he's a little behind the power curve on this one because, well, the Al-Qassam cyber fighters seem to be exhibiting some cyber terror for a couple of months now about that damn Mohammed video on YouTube. Maybe not exactly to the level of a Stuxnet. However, I think one of the problems I see with making a claim like this is that it assumes at least to some level, that infrastructures and technologies being used are homogeneous. And by the way, if you keep hearing clicking, I apologize. I've got freaking Legos that my kids left around, and I have to fiddle with it while I'm talking. It's a terrible habit. Hope you don't ever pick that up. So anyway, as I was saying, assuming that cyber terrorists are going to be able to damage the critical infrastructure of a country really makes an assumption that there's some commonality across the board. And so, you know, you might be able to, for instance, you know, take out the New York City Water Department, but, you know, the New York City Water Department isn't connected to the Boston Water Department and the Atlanta Water Department and the Detroit Water Department. These are entirely different systems. They're running entirely different technologies. They're architected entirely differently. It seems very difficult, at least for me, to get my head around how you would, on a wide scale, damage all of those different kinds of systems in a scale that would actually matter. You know, clearly, if you take out a large city's infrastructure, that's a bad thing. But it's not devastating. You know, notwithstanding Boston's reaction to searching for a 19-year-old, it really isn't going to rise to the level of what most people will consider a terror attack. So, anyway, maybe somebody else has a different view and can set me straight on that one, but that's my thought anyway. All right, last thing I want to talk about is a couple of weeks ago, I had a rough time at a bar. I was in New York at a conference, had too much fun. I came back, I recorded a podcast. I promised to buy someone a book, and I'm going to deliver. There is a person named Dan who has sent me some nice emails, and Dan is going to be getting a copy of Richard Baitlick's new book when it comes out. I'm going to see if I can somehow shoot him an Amazon key or something like that. Anyway, I appreciate everyone who sent in an email. Definitely, if you have any additional suggestions, let me know. I will get back to talking about books. That was Dan's recommendation, that I do some book reviews. I will tell you, I haven't read a darn thing other than half of a Verizon DBIR in the past probably week and a half. But I'll get back to it, and I'll give you guys some feedback in future podcasts. Anyway, I hope you all have a great week. I'm going to try to get back on track and deliver another episode on Sunday. Contact me if you have feedback at DefensiveSec on Twitter. No malicious links, please. Email is info@defensivesecurity.org. The website is www.defensivesecurity.org. You'll find the show notes and lots of other cool stuff I've posted up there. With that, I bid you adieu. Have a great one. Bye.